Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah. What's going on, folks? What's going on? We are in here live on September 18, 2016 with the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We'll be getting into it here in a little bit. But first, we have a few commercials to go through. And then we'll be talking about what happened over the course of the week, which had a couple of fights that were on HBO pay-per-view. And we'll also get into a little bit more news and notes within the sport. Be sure to, you know, stay on and listen in. And if you want to, call in to talk boxing. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
Here's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists. And guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
We are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, we're pretty much going to, you know, get into it here with the results of what happened last night over in Jerry's World in Arlington, Texas, as, you know, he had the fight for the WBO Super Welterweight Championship as Saul Canelo Alvarez went on to take on Liam Smith there at AT&T Stadium. Liam Smith was coming in there 23-0 and had 13 KOs with a good number of them, at least 8 of them, coming in his last 8 fights. He won the WBO Super Welterweight Championship over John Thompson back in October of 2015. Was able to win it there in the UK by a TKO victory and defended it a couple of times before facing Saul Canelo Alvarez. And the thing about it was that, you know, coming up into this fight, we really didn't see if Liam Smith, with the nickname of Beefy, had much of a shot against Canelo Alvarez there. But especially going up against the likes of Kilrain Kelly and Predrag Radosevic before this super fight here against Canelo Alvarez. He was able to get that shot see if he could pull off the upset against Canelo Alvarez. And while he was game against Canelo Alvarez, was able to get off combos, was able to, you know, move around the ring a little bit, he was still getting battered there against Canelo and eventually succumbed to a body shot to suffer a TKO loss. So Liam Smith loses the WBO World Super Welterweight Championship to Canelo Alvarez, and Canelo Alvarez goes to 48-1-1 with 34 KOs to his record. Before I get into it a little bit, I'm going to see if I can get one person on the show here. Area code 202, what's going on with you on the Boston Source Radio Show?
Hey, what's going on? It's World Rank checking in. What's going on?
World Rank, man, how you been?
I've been good, man. I've been very busy, but I've been good, man. I just haven't came on in a while, and I just want to check up on you guys and see, listen to you guys talk boxing.
All right, all right. There, you're basically the first caller coming in here. Was just, you know, giving a little opening about, you know, the pay-per-view card. Just went right into the main event, giving like a quick synopsis there about, you know, Liam Beefy Smith and Saul Canelo Alvarez, and Canelo Alvarez scoring the TKO victory through the body shot. And, you know, kind of like saying that, you know, Liam Smith probably was, you know, game for a little bit and, you know, was, you know, there kind of like toe-to-toe with Canelo Alvarez. But we all saw the, like, a significant size difference where it seemed like, you know, Liam Smith looked like a super welterweight while Canelo Alvarez looked like a middleweight and probably bigger. It almost seemed like the comparison to where Austin Trout fought Charlo, and where Austin Trout just looked a lot smaller than Charlo did once they were able to step into the ring. So wanted to get your thoughts about, you know, what happened in this particular fight.
I didn't buy the fight. I didn't feel like it was worth it. I did see the stoppage. That was a real good body shot that Canelo landed. Liam Smith was game. He was tough. But he just wasn't on – he's just not on that elite level. And it's just a different level when you go from being a undercard fighter on, you know, on Frank Warren's card or to stepping up to a pay-per-view. So, you know, Liam Smith is a decent fighter. Actually, all the Smith brothers are fairly decent. Liam is probably the second best, I think, out of the four. But – you know, he had a decent showing. You know, when you're different level like that, I don't know too much more that he could have did. So, you know, it was expected, but, you know, he made a decent showing for us. So.
Yeah, it was a decent showing. I mean, it was like I was saying, Beefy Smith was showing that he was, you know, game against Canelo, and he took a lot of shots from Alvarez during that fight, and you know, going into those later rounds there, like when he was suffering when he had that first little knockdown, when Canelo gave him a good little combo and finished with a body shot that took him down a little bit. I mean, he could have, you know, he could have stayed down or stayed on one knee there in the seventh round. But he got up and then went into the eighth round, got knocked down in the eighth round, too, and then still got up, and then you had that body shot. And one thing, watching the sport of boxing, there's nothing that really, like, gets to me, like, almost internally than seeing somebody get knocked down by a serious body shot. I mean, it's almost like you could feel it. Right after you see it. I mean, I've seen, like, some good ones that have been out there. When you had that one there, and, you know, when I saw that Shannon Briggs last fight that he had with the replacement opponent, and he, you know, stopped him with the body shot, that, you know, was kind of like, yeah, that kind of, like, had me too. So here, I just saw that, you know, Alvarez was just, you know, too good for this guy, and I saw that from the beginning, man. So, I mean, I was able to just watch that fight after, you know, the co-feature, which I'll get into a little bit later. But I just saw that, you know, Canelo was trying to, you know, move along slowly as far as, like, the progression of his career, and for, you know, him to basically get this fight instead of fighting Gennady Golovkin. That has been kind of like the plan of Oscar De La Hoya to manage Canelo's career, which I'll get on into here in a little bit. But real quick, though, since we like did a quick synopsis of this Canelo Alvarez and Liam Smith fight, they had a undercard fight there, a co-feature, which was in the middleweight division between Willie Monroe Jr. and King Gabe Rosado. And, you know, these two guys are kind of notable to some fans as, you know, both of these guys, you know, face Gennady Golovkin in the middleweight division. And, they were able to see if they could get a matchup between each other because there was a potential fight that was going to be on the undercard for middleweight titles. Billy Joe Saunders was offered as being part of the undercard to go up against either like Gabe Rosado or Willie Monroe, and Billy Joe Saunders passed on both of those fights. So as a filler, they put Willie Monroe Jr. in there against Gabe Rosado. And, you know, before that fight was coming up, I couldn't really call who would be able to get the win here. But, you know, Willie Monroe Jr. ended up getting the unanimous decision victory, basically outboxing Gabriel Rosado from you know, the opening bell into the last part of the fight. So Willie Monroe Jr. moves to 21-2 as Gabe Rosado suffers his 10th loss of his career. And there's going to be, you know, a little bit more going into what Willie Monroe might be able to get here later on. But I wanted to see if World Ranked, if you seen any highlights of this Willie Monroe, Gabe Rosado, or if you have any thoughts about either fighter.
Yeah, I didn't see the fight, but I can tell you going into the fight, I expected a close fight, but I expected Rosado to actually win. I was a little disappointed in from hearing the results or seeing the results that, you know, he basically was outboxed those 10 full rounds. I don't know where he goes from here. He has 10 losses. I always go back to Gabe Rosado's career and always think about the move that he made for – I still think the wrong move was, I mean, for his career, he made a decent amount of money and getting Triple G. Mm-hmm. But before that, he had a chance at a belt at 54 against K-9. He was a mandatory. He passed that up to fight Triple G. I understand the logic in terms of him making money, but in terms of him ever being an A-side or even a world titleist, he passed that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I always think of what could have been, you know, if he'd have took that route as opposed to the money route, because usually when you're a belt holder, you have a little more options in terms of making money and being an A-side. But him taking the route of Triple G and going that route made him basically a gatekeeper from that point forward. So always think about what could have been if he'd have took the other option. Like I said, I don't know where he goes from here. For Willie Monroe, from what I heard about the fight, you know, it wasn't an entertaining fight. So what would be interesting for me to see what happens is there's going to be a lot of people lining up to fight him because of his style. You know, he's a boxer. You're not going to get hurt when you go in with him. So, you know, it's a decent name. It is a difficult style, but I think people like Lemieux, Stevens, even Canelo, even Billy Joe Saunders, they might look at him and see him as a name, but an easy defense because he doesn't present any power or anything, you know, to hurt him. And I always think about those type of fighters, you know, when you don't have a punch, a la Paulie Malignaggi, Willie Monroe, other people like that. When you don't have a punch, the fights always go to the scorecards, and you always have a chance to get robbed. So he's going to get a big fight soon.
Yeah, I feel that, you know, Willie Monroe is, you know, in line to, you know, get a bigger fight here by defeating Gabe Rosado in the middleweight ranks. I think that, you know, he, you know, may get something coming up here, you know, against another middleweight. I'm not sure if it's going to be I don't think it's going to be David Lemieux here because Lemieux is actually scheduled to fight in Montreal on October 22nd. So I've heard hints that actually Willie Monroe might be the next in line to fight Canelo Alvarez, and that may be, you know, within the you know, above 154 pounds, if they're able to face each other. It just depends on what the status of Canelo is, because there was a, you know, report of him hurting his hand. So, you know, we might get more news on in reference to that. But it was like you were saying there, World Rank. I mean, Willie Monroe Jr. is, you know, a boxer. He doesn't have that much power. It's not like he has, you know, blazing speed there in the middleweight division that would cause problems for a lot of middleweight boxers. So other middleweights would be, you know, interested in trying to get a fight with them. I mean, you know, you have Billy Joe Saunders there with a WBO middleweight title belt that may be, you know, interested in going in there against them. You have, like you were saying, I know you were saying there, David Lemieux, but there, you know, also Curtis Stevens is a guy that could have a potential fight with him if there's like a undercard thing set up for him to make that happen. Also, you have Chris Eubank out there that, you know, may be an attractive fight for them to have. So I was trying to see, like, if there's anything else where, you know, Willie Monroe could go through in the middleweight division. Right now I'm seeing him only being ranked in one particular boxing organization, and that's the WBO, as at that point Gabe Rosado was ranked number 10 and Willie Monroe was ranked number 14. So Monroe will be able to move up those ranks in the WBO, but anywhere else I can't necessarily see him out there. So he might need, you know, another fight or two to see if he'll be contending for one of those belts. But like I said, he might have a outside shot to fight Canelo Alvarez in the month of December.
You know how the rankings go. The rankings, you know, they move. You know, they put people where they want to put them at. So I don't, you know, I don't list that as per se as the reason why they won't make the fight. But I, like I said before, I think his style will have people lining up to face him. And plus, he's on the cheap side, so you don't have to pay him a lot. He's not going to require a lot, you know, to get him. You know, I guess especially if he's ranking the WBO, I think that'll be a good fight for Billy Joe in terms of a name, but not really someone that's going to challenge him. It might not be a great style fight, but I think, you know, it's a cheap fight. It's going to be in the UK. It's a name. I think they can go that route, you know, the Canelo route. You know, they could go that route, but I don't know who would want to pay and see that. To me, that's a Liam Smith level fight. So I don't know. You know, I don't know the reasoning for that. Only reasoning for that is just another fight to say Canelo's ducking someone. So to me, that has no meaning. I can see Jacobs even reaching out to Willie Monroe and saying, you know, give me that fight. You know, again, a guy that got a name, short money, not a heavy hitter. That's a perfect opponent for most champions. Mm-hmm. Most champions love those type of fighters. So he's definitely about to get a big name somewhere.
Yeah, I kind of see that too for Willie Monroe. They might, yeah, just give him something either where he has the, you know, title shot against Daniel Jacobs. They just, you know, eventually end up naming him, you know, within those top 15 rankings by the month of October or so, and then have, you know, Daniel Jacobs end up fighting Willie Monroe Jr. there. Or like you were saying, other guys that may be within that range that would actually give him a shot. Real quick here, the number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue, and I'll be able to talk live on the show. Continuing in here with the talk about Saul Canelo Alvarez and, you know, his whole little thing with the back and forth between him and Gennady Golovkin. You know, for months and months and months, that the fight between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin is going to happen, but it's going to happen in September of 2017. And, you know, after the fight between Alvarez and Smith, it seemed like Oscar and then if he could put in a little hint as to Tom Loeffler. So I'm going to play a clip here real quick, that shows what he was saying after the Alvarez Smith fight, and then I'll pitch in with my thoughts here real quick. So hold on with me just 1 second.
I'm sure a lot of people are going to ask me, what's next? You guys heard Max ask Canelo, what's next? I didn't want to talk about any other offers that we had made to anybody else. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. Because we respect Liam Smith, and he was a real competitor, a real champion, and I told everyone, I mean, this is going to be a very tough, difficult fight, and obviously a lot of people didn't believe me, but it turns out to be a tough, competitive fight. So 30 days ago, I made an offer to Triple G and his people. I made a significant offer, an eight-figure offer. I believe it's an offer that was two, three, or even four times as much as he's ever made. And I haven't heard back. And that's the bottom line. And look, I want to make this fight. There's no doubt about it. Jerry and I were just talking for several minutes on how he would love that fight here in his stadium. And I had to actually use one of his lines. I told him, Jerry, just, you gotta show me the money. You have to show me the money. That's the bottom line, because the bottom line is Canelo is not afraid of anybody. He's gonna fight Triple G in September, and now with his hurt knuckle, you know, we have to go back to the drawing board and see what's going to happen for December, because his plans, our plans are to fight in December, and then fight in May, and then do the big fight in September. But all I need is for Triple G and his people to at least call us back and negotiate and take the offer. You know, Triple G mentioned that he's not a businessman, and he said publicly that Canelo is going to offer him $2 million, and well, guess what? There's an eight-figure number on the table for Triple G. Sign the contract, and then let's stop with this nonsense. So that's what the deal is. That's what we have on the table. And like I said, Canelo right now is the biggest star, the fighter who delivers action-packed fights, and without any further ado, I would like to introduce to you to the new WBO 154-pound.
All right, we don't need all those introductions there. That's not needed. But basically, that's Oscar De La Hoya breaking down, you know, what went on, I guess, what was going on between him, Canelo, Tom Loeffler, and Gennady Golovkin, and he basically says that he offered a 10-figure deal to Gennady Golovkin and his team, which included Tom Loeffler, and that it was turned down or something like that. And kind of seems like there have been claims out there that this offer actually was made, but you know, I'm not necessarily too sure about that. I don't think that, you know, the fight between Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez kind of brings a eight-figure payday for Gennady Golovkin, unless, you would have something where the total purse would be $25 million or something like that, maybe, or something where it's, you know, $30 million and Canelo would make $20 million while Golovkin would make $10 million. But I just don't see that there. And the whole thing is that they're trying to prolong this fight because it might be the biggest fight that HBO will have in a good while. And I actually kind of broke that down a little bit in a video that's on the YouTube channel for the Boxing Source. I have another caller here, area code 813. Just tell us your name and where you're calling in from.
Hey, James, this is Terrell calling from Tampa, Florida. Just once again checking in. Missed out on the past couple of weeks, but glad to be back on the show and to get back into the action and of boxing. So,
hey there, brother Terrell. How's it going with you there?
Good. And even on the topic what I just heard you discuss in terms of purses for the potential Triple G Canelo fight. Now I don't know the highest purse that Triple G has had. But like this, hoping that Triple G takes a Jacobs fight this year, or even another fight, going into a true Canelo fight, does he deserve an $8 payday? I would say yes, because the thing about it, despite his record, well, I won't say his record, but despite the quality of opposition that he's faced, I'd give him credit for generating buzz within the boxing world, whether that's actually respected or not. The guy has generated buzz. And like I said, we already know we have not seen him fight a top-tier opponent at this point yet. We know that. Because I'm certainly not going to give him credit for beating Kell Brook last week. I'm not even put that on his level, even though Kell Brook was an undefeated fighter. But I'll be at a – but does he deserve an eight-figure payday? Yes, he does. And I said that, and that's just based upon his body work, his promotion ability, and the interest that he has generated within boxing, and that does count for something. Because there's other fighters out there that have been fighting for a long time, but they have not been able to generate that interest. So he does deserve an $8 payday. How much? I don't know. That is yet to be determined. And we already know at this point, all this back and forth between the both camps, Canelo and Triple G's camp, is all about posturing in order to see who gets what cut of the pie, you know. So, but like I said, he definitely should get an eight-figure payday, definitely.
All right. Hey, World Rank, what you got to say on the clip with Oscar De La Hoya?
Hey, what's going on, Terrell? I want to ask you a question. You said you don't get Triple G credit for Kell Brook, and I kind of understand that. But I want to ask you, who do you give, or if you give Triple G any credit for any of his wins, and if you do, who do you give him credit for?
You know, I would say David Lemieux, and even though I'm on this show, I said that Lemieux was to me rushed to that fight. I think because at that point, Lemieux had built a solid name to that point. And as soon as he got that title, his next fight was against Triple G. And I still think the jury remains out on Lemieux on how good he's going to be after that that loss. He's had a couple of fights since then, and is scheduled to have some more, even though they were trying to line up Lemieux versus Stevens from New York. And according to Kathy Duda, he turned that fight down and didn't want no parts of it. That kind of says something. But to me, Triple G's best fight, as far as name wise, was Lemieux, and I give him some decent credit for that, you know. But other than that, who else has he fought? We've had that discussion numerous times, so hopefully we can get him in there with Jacobs, because that would definitely satisfy me to see him there in there with a full legitimate top tier middleweight at this point.
I know Kell Brook is not a middleweight, but is there any credence to that Kell Brook would be competitive with David Lemieux?
He could compete with him at 154. I would say so, yes.
Now, even at middleweight, do you think Kell Brook
would be middleweight.
Would he be competitive against Lemieux at middleweight?
And that's just looking at the Triple G fight. I'll say yes. I'll say yes, because and the reason why I say that, Lemieux is known as a devastating puncher with his hook and everything like that. I don't know if Lemieux is actually physically strong as Triple G, but with that said, Kell Brook could compete at 160. Yes, I do agree with that.
So my take in terms of the money is, I mean, I call bull on Oscar. To say his people, Triple G's people, haven't contacted him back and all that good stuff, and I got eight figures. I don't believe all that because everybody knows who Triple G deals with, Loeffler, Tom Loeffler. Oscar can easily say, you know, Tom didn't call me back or this person didn't call me back. He's saying his people, so I know, you know, and Oscar's probably not even in the discussions with the camps about, you know, about that. So I'm calling him bull on that, but I would also say that, you know, why would you calling, you know, you're saying that he's going to make this much, he's going to fight on this date, and so on and so forth. You're not giving Triple G no room for movement anywhere. You're saying that he got to take this amount of money, you got to take this fight at this date. There's got to be some type of movement, and if there's not, you know, Triple G brings the belts to the table. He brings legitimizing Canelo, even though they probably legitimize mm-hmm. each other, but there's still some type of value that Triple G brings where you're not even willing to move around anything in terms of the money, the date, or anything. And also, I think that whoever's paying for the fight in terms of broadcasting it, HBO, Showtime, whoever, they should be able to step in the negotiations and be able to tell what's really going on, because they're going to be the ones that put the show on. And I still don't understand why these networks do not deal with buying fights as opposed to buying fighters. Because if they're going to be presenting this, they should be in the negotiations whenever it happens, now, later, or whenever, to be able to tell us who's telling the truth. Is Oscar really telling the truth, or is he not? But for whatever reason, they're not in the discussions.
All right, I'll break that down, you know, in a little bit, but I'm trying to see if I could bring in another caller in here. Area code 205, what's going on with you?
What's going on, James? It's Mike Grady, man.
Hey there, Mike Grady.
I hear y'all guys talking about Lemieux and Kell Brook maybe fighting or something. Like, would it be competitive?
Like, if it was a possibility that if, you know, Kell Brook was fighting somebody like David Lemieux, would it be competitive? You know, like kind of bringing a comparison in reference to the resume of Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, so I think it would be competitive. Like, I sort of am not, like, confident in my answer because I still would have to see Kell Brook fight somebody else at that weight. You know, like, is he not strong enough? You know, like, is he too small? That's what I would need to see. Like, because him fighting Golovkin was not a good barometer. Yeah, he landed some punches on Golovkin, and he landed some pretty good punches, but can he stand up to a bigger guy, even still? And, you know, will his punches, even though they look pretty good and they land pretty good, will they, like, stop a guy like Lemieux on this track? So, honestly, I would need to see him fight somebody again. But I think it should be competitive, like, with what Kell Brook can bring. And, I don't know, Kell Brook got a jab, though. I mean, that's the one thing I would say that would make the fight competitive. If he didn't jab, then the Lemieux fight would be tough for him.
Yeah. I think that the whole thing with, you know, a potential fight between Kell Brook and David Lemieux would be, you know, fairly competitive and whatnot. Actually, that I would have thought that Kell Brook, if he wanted to move into the middleweight division, that Lemieux would be a good barometer fight for him to take before going against the higher echelon fighters within the division at middleweight. So I think that would be like a, you know, kind of like a barometer fight for him. I mean, David Lemieux, before fighting Gennady Golovkin, I mean, he just basically won that title against Hassan Ndam and did have a good little win streak there before fighting Gennady Golovkin. But he lost against Joachim Alsie, Marco Antonio Rubio before that. So he already had like two losses to his record. And that in that fight between him and Hassan Ndam was basically his biggest fight that – or his biggest win that he had up to that point of his career. So it's not like we really know how good De La Mew really is, because he basically fought who was one of the top guys in the middleweight division in Gennady Golovkin and basically got blown away. So if you like had him against a Daniel Jacobs or against an Andy Lee, a Billy Joe Saunders, or somebody like Peter Quillen, we probably, you know, get a better barometer of, you know, how good he really would be in that particular fight. Now, going back to what World Rank was talking about in reference to Canelo and Oscar saying what he was saying, and, you know, while I really don't totally buy what Oscar is saying, he's basically stating that Canelo holds all the cards here in this particular fight. And, you know, while he's saying, you know, what the date is, where the fight's going to be and all of that is basically handled by him, it's because he holds all the cards. This is what I'm seeing here is a repeat of when Bernard Hopkins was going to fight Oscar De La Hoya for the middleweight championship belts. I mean, Bernard Hopkins had the, you know, three of the four title belts, major title belts in the middleweight division. He had a 20-plus fight win streak with the IBF middleweight championship, but yet with Oscar De La Hoya only having the WBO middleweight championship, he still commanded most of his shots there in that particular fight. He ordered the cash weight for Bernard Hopkins to agree to, and Bernard Hopkins just eventually ended up taking the fight and went on ahead and just defeated Oscar De La Hoya. So here right now, it's just about Gennady Golovkin making concessions in order to get that fight. There have been other fighters that have, you know, made concessions in order to get the big fights that they needed to have, or the money fight, the super fight. So right now, it's on to Gennady Golovkin to see if Gennady Golovkin is going to make those concessions as well.
And just to add one more small point, too, it's like when in recent memory have you seen so much back and forth just to get one fight made? At this point, everybody, the public demands it. That demand is out there, and with that public demand, that money is going to be out there, too, for the fight. But at this point, I'm getting so sick and tired of this story, that story, that point about and there's so many reasons on why not to fight. It's getting ridiculous at this point. I know you guys are tired of it too.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to say, you know, whatever to make them look better in the public court of opinion, whatever. But I don't know. I still think Canelo has the right to be demanding when it comes to Golovkin, because Canelo has more to lose. Canelo has more to offer and more to lose, in my opinion. And so with that being said, he should fight Golovkin, but Canelo should get more, should gain more, since he's offering and risking more. Do you agree with that well ranked?
You guys are all correct on all aspects of what you guys are saying. But the only thing I would say to that is, if you look, besides Bernard Hopkins, every guy that made a concession to fight any A side always lost. And I think we forget that. They're A side not only because of the money they bring, but other situations that come with that, the judging, the scoring, things of that nature. So besides Bernard Hopkins, there's not too many guys who are not the A-side that went in and fought the A-side taking less money or whatever they took and won the fight. So there has to be, especially for Triple G, there has to be some type of concession because these guys are already at a disadvantage because of how the game works. So there has to be some type of legitimacy to the fight. And if they're giving an A-side who doesn't necessarily deserve it in the ring all these concessions, then they're already at a disadvantage in the actual fight. So there's not too many guys who are going to be the B-side and actually win the fight.
Well, Golovkin is a different monster. So both of them guys can get touched. That's inevitable. Both of them will get touched. But what I saw from Canelo yesterday is that if he's not going on offense, then, yeah, he definitely going to get touched. And we're going to definitely see how good his chin is when he goes up a weight and not, like, necessarily bigger than the person. So I don't think Golovkin, even though he will make concessions, will be that much at a disadvantage because, you know, should he hit Canelo a few good times and, you know, he's going to be seeing, like, birds and, you know, flashing lights and stuff.
And I'm actually glad you said that, Mike, because actually I was able to see the fight last night with Canelo and Smith. And comparing Canelo now to what he is now, his Mayweather fight, how much he has improved, and he has improved as a fighter. Pretty much in all aspects of his game, ring generalship, power, and really the main thing for him, weight. But and after I was watching the fight last night, I actually think that Triple G will really give him some major problems in the ring because of his aggressive style and the strength of his chin. And actually, we know he hasn't truly been tested. We know that. Brooke dinged him a couple of times. We that's been acknowledged. But I really think that Triple G would probably beat him at this point. And you push away all this rhetoric and just concentrate on just the fight itself. I really think it's going to be a really good fight, despite Triple G's quality of opposition.
I don't think there's nothing that Canelo does that overly trumps what Triple G would do with backs for him. So that's what would make it a competitive fight.
Now, Terrell, I kind of like, you know, even though it's going to be a middleweight, I kind of disagree. I'm leaning towards the side of Canelo in that fight between him and Golovkin. And the reason why I lean towards Canelo is because of, you know, what he's been able to do and adjust to over the course of his career. I mean, he did get embarrassed by Floyd Mayweather, but ever since then, he's pretty much improved as a fighter. He's been able to, you know, mix up his attacks and throw, you know, a good amount of combos. I like the way that he was, you know, moving around the ring and throwing combos in his last few fights, notably against Miguel Cotto and here against Liam Smith. And to me, I think that, you know, when he faces Gennady Golovkin, it may be the first time that Gennady Golovkin will end up facing somebody in the ring that's going to be the same size as he is. One of the things that is a critique about Gennady Golovkin and his overall resume is that he fights a lot of guys that end up being smaller than he is once they get into the ring. And, of course, that was evident in his last fight between him and Kell Brook. While Kell Brook was able to touch him up and score with, you know, a few combinations, a good set of uppercuts and things like that, it was an uppercut coming from a guy that was a career welterweight. And while he was able to go up to 176 pounds and then cut down to the 160-pound limit, it's still somebody that is, you know, trying to get used to fighting an actual middleweight instead of fighting a welterweight. So in this case here with Gennady Golovkin facing Canelo Alvarez, he's going to be facing somebody that will be around that particular weight range, because Canelo Alvarez sometimes goes into fights at, you know, 165 pounds or up to 170, 171 pounds. So that's why I feel like Canelo Alvarez, I would kind of lean towards the side of Canelo Alvarez if he was able to fight Gennady Golovkin, because I have not really seen Gennady Golovkin in a fight the level of where Canelo Alvarez has been into over the course of his career. World rank, you got anything to add to it?
I mean, I'm just looking at it from the outside of the ring aspect, and I would pick Canelo just on the basis of the fact of if Floyd Mayweather can dominate somebody for 12 rounds and still basically get a majority decision. You look at the Trout fight, look at the Laura fight. As long as Canelo stands, to me, as long as he stands for 12 rounds, he has a chance to win any and every fight. And just that alone, I think he has enough offense to keep Triple G at bay, at least to stay 12 rounds. And if he does that, he's going to get the decision on the cards.
Well, you know, he already always had that one judge who gives him like the 118, 110 fight. So he's straight on that aspect.
So you guys think it's going 12 rounds between these two guys? You really think that?
It could possibly get to it, but that would mainly depend on Canelo. I think what I've seen is that, you know, when going up against Gennady Golovkin, Golovkin is, you know, somebody that is a, like Mayweather says, is straight up and down, you know, no special effects, and as in he's straightforward in what his fight plan is. He's going in there to attack. He's going in there seeing that you're not going to be able to back him up. And that's why I mentioned the thing about him not facing fighters that pretty much have been the same size as him or end up being bigger than him, is because when he's able to get touched up a little bit, he doesn't necessarily back up unless if he's actually thrown off by a punch. So if he's able to take your shot, it's pretty much over with. All he has to do is learn how to cut off the ring against you, get you to the ropes, and then do his work. But with Canelo Alvarez, all Canelo Alvarez has to do is just make sure that he doesn't get caught in between the ropes, or if he gets in between the ropes, see if he could do a combo 1-2 and then get away from the ropes and just keep that going. And I think he's, you know, been able to improve his skills fight after fight after fight, where he's going to be able to do that against Gennady Golovkin.
James, the one thing that I would see as a potential problem for Canelo, which is also I see as a problem for Golovkin, is that they both fight in spurts. They fight like they have lows. Mm-hmm. So he'll like, yes, you're right, he has gotten better. He has, you know, shown that he can do the boxing thing. He's shown that he can, you know, so slickness is in the mind. He's shown that mentally he can be slick in his mind or whatever. But when he gets to, like, round three, round four, he just sits there. Like, with his last fight, he was getting touched because he was just sitting there. And he shouldn't have got touched by this guy, you know. And so if he gets touched by Golovkin, it's going to be a problem. But the same thing with Golovkin is that, you know, his defense doesn't appear to be that great. And so as long as Canelo goes on the offense and, like, lets his hands go and do that big uppercut that he does and, you know, throw them 1-2-3 punch combos and then keep moving, yeah, you're right. He should definitely get to the point to where he gets to what World Rank said. He'll win the decision or go to the 12 rounds via decision or whatever. But, yeah. But I just hope he don't stop and just get touched in them lows, man, because it's going to be a sad day.
Golovkin is not a power, not a one-hitter power puncher. He's a overtime accumulator puncher. So he's going to have time. And Canelo's going to move in the fight. He's going to be the mover. He's going to be the boxer. He's not going to sit in there and trade with Triple G. Golovkin is not going to hit Canelo often enough to apply pressure on him,
to hurt him. That's just my opinion. I think he's gonna land some, but it's not gonna be consistent pressure. There's gonna be rounds like he had in the Brook fight where Triple G is not the same each round. He's not gonna be applying the pressure every round.
Mm-hmm. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick, that's what I'm saying. That's why defense is going to be so imperative in this fight and will be a big decisive thing in regards to who wins. I mean, the ability to stop punches, see punches coming, even in the midst of those spurts, defense. You know, because we are, how many fights have we all seen where a fighter is throwing a high volume of punches, but he's not really fighting, he's not really connecting like that with decisive hits. So defense itself is going to be very key in this fight. It's going to be underrated.
Yeah, I mean, paper, like with what Canelo can offer, he should win. He should be able to box and win a decision.
I mean, it's just about if he's able to sustain that energy, you know, for those 12 rounds against Gennady Golovkin. And I mean, to me, with the whole plan that, you know, Oscar is putting out there for Canelo Alvarez to have a fight in December and then have a fight in May, I think what the potential plan there is to have, you know, at least one of those two fights be, you know, at the middleweight limit where he could be around, you know, 155 to 160 pounds to see how he's able to, you know, fight against the middleweight. Actually, you know, I kind of felt that, you know, that fight between Willie Monroe Jr. and Gabe Rosado, if Gabe Rosado was able to score that win, that he would be able to end up fighting Canelo Alvarez. And, you know, maybe he would be a guy that has a little bit more size in comparison to Willie Monroe to see what Canelo Alvarez would be able to do against him. But, you know, with Willie Monroe ending up winning the fight by decision, then we may potentially see that Canelo Alvarez-Willie Monroe fight in December and then have some other particular fight coming up in May. And then after that, you'll have Canelo versus Golovkin for most of those middleweight title belts in September 7, 2017.
So who here doesn't think that Canelo won't knock Willie Monroe out? Who doesn't think that will happen?
Well, I think unanimous.
Say it again.
I feel it should be unanimous that we all should think that he'd be able to KO Monroe.
What, like, he was killing me. Like, he was doing sort of, I guess you could call it a Floyd Mayweather rendition, but, like, sort of what Broner be doing, where he have his lead hand, and it's kind of, like, on his hip, sort of, and his hands is down like that. And so it was, like, kind of making me a little angry, perturbed that, I forgot his name, but what's his name, couldn't capitalize on his hand not being up. All he had to do was, like, throw two punches, and then the third punch would be the punch that, like, sort of landed. Maybe that was the difference in speed, but it was – if he does that against Canelo, it's going to be really, really sad day, similar to how it was with Golovkin. And he just doesn't throw punches. He just kind of, like, just sit there. Like, he throws some punches. He counters pretty well, but – yeah, it'll be a sad day against Canelo.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that too in the fight last night between Rosado and Willie Monroe Jr. He basically sat in the pocket and, like you said, used that rendition of the Mayweather defensive style and basically countered him the entire night. Monroe Jr. did definitely have the hand speed advantage in the fight, definitely. But at the same time, Rosado did little to nothing to counter that and to adjust to that style. I mean, the best thing he could have done is basically rotate Monroe the other way. That's the best thing he could have done, and he never did do that. He just kept going forward, and even you see the look on his face, even when his coach Vargas was imploring him to do something different, he couldn't figure it out. And that was just – it made for – I'm not going to say it was an ugly fight, but going forward to, between a Canelo and a Monroe Jr., it's kind of like a stay-busy fight. And of course, I certainly think that – well, I know for a fact that there will definitely be a KO in that fight. It'll be a bit interesting within the first four rounds. Of course it would. But like you said, Canelo would definitely be expected to knock him out because you can't do that against a top-tier fighter, just sit in the pocket and then try to see everything coming. Canelo's going to have more command, more power, and more ring generalship to cut that off. And Mauro's going to be forced to react to it. And when he does react, we know what's coming.
I mean, if
right,
he actually
that.
Had the real speed to do that, then you could sit in the pocket and counteract. But even the people who does do that, they still lead with offense. They still like do things to make people not know what they're gonna do to them. Like, for example, Floyd Mayweather. Like, yeah, he's a defensive fighter, but he does offensive moves, and it makes people like question themselves. Point in case. Manny Pacquiao, he was like second guessing himself the whole fight through Floyd Mayweather's offensive and defensive moves.
Right.
Just getting in here, actually, we stepped into the overtime portion of the show. And here, I guess I'll, you know, get into a little bit of news and notes. Within the sport of boxing, and kind of like opening with news and notes about, you know, fights that aren't happening. And one of those fights that isn't happening, for example, is there was, you know, supposed to be a fight going on that was scheduled for next week that they were talking about months ago. Danny Garcia was supposed to be on slate to fight Andre Berto to defend his WBC welterweight championship, but that fight has not come to fruition, and now there have been reports swirling around that Danny Garcia was going to end up fighting a voluntary defense. I think that was, who was it, against John Molina that they were talking about? I think it was John
right.
Molina.
Right.
Yeah. So it seems like instead of going up against somebody that was one of the top two contenders for the WBC welterweight title belt. It seems like, you know, Danny Garcia is choosing to fight John Molina Jr. for his first defense of the WBC welterweight belt and his third fight officially at 147 pounds. So just wanted to go through the rounds to see what y'all thoughts are about this. Starting with World Rank, what you got to say on that?
Right now, boxing is in the law, man. We keep getting these. They talk about one fight, a big fight, seems like a decent fight, and then we get somebody else. We get a step in, or something happens, and we get another fight. So, you know, boxing is the law. We gotta make some fights because I don't know, man. I've been a fan for about 10, 15 years, and it's nothing exciting. I was looking at the schedule today, and it's just not much on the schedule. You know, these guys got to fight each other, and if they don't, man, this sport could be in real big trouble.
Well, I mean, I feel like the sport is in kind of big trouble as it is, especially on the HBO side. That's why I kind of, you know, mentioned the thing with Canelo and Golovkin being prolonged as long as it can, because I mean, right now all they have as far as like a big event going in towards the end of the year is Kovalev and Ward, and while you do have the rematch between Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko coming up, that's an overseas fight, so
you're going to have that fight be overseas, happening, you know, at a time where most of the American fight fans won't be able to see it, you know, in the evening. They'll have to see it in the afternoon. So it's few choices left there for HBO Boxing to showcase, you know, big fights now. And you have Kovalev Ward, and there's so much on the line with that because Ward is actually that would be his last fight fighting under HBO unless they renew the contract. So there'll be a lot of on the line in reference to that. But as far as, like, these fights not happening, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of taken away with what's going on within the sport. And I'll have another example about a potential fight that kind of, like, disappeared here. But I'm going to go to Terrell then. What's your thoughts about Danny Garcia potentially fighting John Molina Jr.?
Yeah, I've read those reports that have surfaced within the last few days. And, of course, my initial reaction, disappointed. Because I forgot when Berto's last fight was, but at this point, he's definitely available. There's no injury setback. There's really no network alignment that will prevent this fight. He's available to fight. He's still a top contender. And for reports of him to fight John Molina, I forgot who John Molina. I think he won his last fight. Was it Guerrero, right? Or who did he have his last fight? I know it's a definite win.
Siberian Rocky.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
So,
did he beat him though?
Yeah, he beat him.
He beat him. Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, is John Molina faded? No, he's not faded. He's still a name. I mean, he's not. I would put him like a. He's probably ranked in the top 20. I'm guessing at this point. But like I said, Berto's available. He's right there. And you're a welterweight champion. I'm just kind of blown by that. But I hope it doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't. I mean, although I think it will. I mean, look back when Garcia was at 140. And he fought that kid named Sokka out of nowhere. We was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Why is he fighting?
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's that type of opponent, but Berto's available. Why not fight him? It's a money-making fight. You're a champion. Fight the best, right? So, wow.
Yeah, the thing about John Molina Jr. defeating Ruslan Provodnikov June, I mean, this is just like a few months ago, and this fight was for, you know, a vacant international super lightweight championship. So if he's going up against somebody like John Molina, that would be a huge question mark because he would be moving up to welterweight and then fighting for a welterweight belt. And he's not, you know, within the WBC rankings right now. So if that potential fight gets put together, that I think that goes into what World Rank was saying here earlier in the show about, you know, how these boxing organizations can basically, you know, put in whoever they want within their rankings, you know, just to see if they can make a fight happen. And if this goes through, then it would be a clear example of that. Mike Grady, what you got to say on it?
I mean, I hope he doesn't fight John Molina. Like, I saw the report or whatever, but what would I think of that? Yeah, it would definitely continue to further paint the picture that Danny Garcia don't want to work from, you know, the guys who up there, you know, like, and that's not a good look, you know. It's not a good look. You know, there are a lot of people who are definitely calling him out, and, you know, he's fighting, like you said, people who aren't even in the division. Like, yeah, Berto would make sense for him. I mean, it would be somebody that he should be favored against, but, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, as Terrell said, this guy or some guy may cry soccer or whatever you said, but yeah, it wouldn't be looked at like that. So I just hope it doesn't happen. I think it could possibly happen though, because, you know, with it being on free TV, it's like
it's like a free fight anyway. So, I mean, it's not free per se, but it's just a, you know, a throwaway fight anyway. And it would just, for the most part, be for publicity. But to speak on your comment on Andre Ward, I think Ward would probably benefit the most if, and I know this probably won't happen with Jay-Z and Al Haymon, but he would benefit the most by going to a PBC and getting the viewership from, you know, millions of people. So, you know, this his last fight, that would benefit him most and would help turn him into, you know, a more better pay-per-view star outside of, like, people who just know boxing.
Yeah, that's kind of a good point there with Andre Ward. I mean, the thing with him is, yeah, with him signing with Roc Nation Sports, that kind of is like a little disadvantage for him because it would limit him as far as, like, who he's able to fight while being under the HBO banner. And the thing is that, you know, it kind of seemed like he basically signed that three-fight deal just to be able to fight Sergey Kovalev. And so after he fights Sergey Kovalev, what else is there for him to do in the light heavyweight division? And he kind of hinted at that years ago when he was in his holdout because they were talking about him moving up to light heavyweight back then. And he was saying that, hey, I'm not a light heavyweight. So, you know, if I go up there to light heavyweight and I end up fighting Greg Kovalev and winning, then what? Where would I go after that? You know, it's not like he was mentioning fighting guys like Adonis Stevenson or any of those other guys that are in that light heavyweight division that he could be fighting if he was under the management of Al Haymon. I mean, he, you know, could be fighting guys like Isaac Chalemba, maybe, or Elidor Alvarez, or like Thomas Williams, or Artur Beterbiev.
He fought Saki Obika, who is advised by Haymon, though, right? But this
I
was before
think so.
Jay-Z.
Yeah, but yeah. I think that was before that, yeah. But So I mean, there's a good selection of fighters that do fight or are managed by Al Haymon that, you know, Andre Ward could fight in the light heavyweight division for him to extend his career. But I mean, the thing about it is that if he's able to win this fight against Sergey Kovalev, it's like, what else does he have out there? Other than maybe a potential rematch against Sergey Kovalev. And this is kind of like the thing that Angel Garcia has been mentioning over the past couple of years when it comes to HBO, in that they kind of promote certain fighters while, you know, having other fighters out there in the back burner, even though they may be as skilled or more skilled than the fighters that they push up to be in their top draws there for the network. So that's the thing that, you know, I kind of like feel there in reference to Andre Ward. But the thing here with Garcia and Molina, I'm just hoping that that doesn't come into fruition. Andre Berto was, you know, kind of in a high after winning that rematch there against Victor Ortiz months ago. And so he was, you know, pretty much in line to see if he could get that title shot as Amir Khan moved up to middleweight to fight Canelo Alvarez in May. So he was just basically waiting to see, you know, what Danny Garcia was going to do. And it seems like Danny Garcia isn't necessarily taking that fight against Andre Berto. So we'll see what happens here over the next month and a half, to see if Danny Garcia is able to end up with a fight here before the end of the year. Speaking of fights that, you know, aren't happening, it was one particular fight that, you know, some of the guys that have, you know, been part of the Boxing Source radio show were kind of interested in, including myself. And that was going to be the IBF super welterweight title fight that was going to be Jermall Charlo against the number one ranked contender, Julian J. Rock Williams. Of course, Jermall Charlo defended his belt against Austin Trout back in May in that triple header that they had out there with that featured Jermall Charlo, Arislandi Lara, and Jermall Charlo. And at the end of the fight, you know, we were talking about, you know, having him go up there against Julian J. Rock Williams. And, I mean, even Austin Trout was saying, you know, for Jermall to get J. Rock for me. But the IBF was, you know, ordering for that fight to happen by October 1st. And it looked like everything was going to be put in place for it. At first they had a site that was going to be, you know, there. It was going to be in Los Angeles. And then they were talking about having it as a co-feature to the Danny Garcia-Andre Berto fight. But with the Garcia-Berto fight falling through, it seems like this thing here between Charlo and J-Rock has fallen over by the wayside. So I'm not sure what to make of all of that, because I thought it would be ordered and that, you know, the fight would have had to happen by October 1st. So I'm not sure if Charlo is going to be ordered to give up the belt or not. But it's yet another fight that, you know, would have been a good fight to see and would have had Julian J. Rock Williams have his first, you know, title shot. But it just hasn't come to fruition. So go through the rounds with this here real quick, starting with Mike Grady.
So, yeah, I think J-Rock going to give Austin Trout the work, because that last fight, I don't remember exactly what happened, but something in that fight was letting me know that the offensiveness and the, like, for me, J-Rock is pretty accurate when he throws his punches, and he throw them pretty crisp, too. Maybe he hadn't fought, like, somebody that would make him look bad just yet, but, yeah, I think that Trout will definitely get touched. I forgot who he fought. Oh, he fought, not Trout, but the Charlo brother fought the guy who got knocked out by somebody else. Julian Williams' son or something like that. But, yeah, so in that fight, he didn't look as great to me, and it looked like he would get touched. And so, you know, J-Rock definitely has power, and I think that the combination, you know, and the smarts, you can definitely see J-Rock thinking in the ring. And so I think that his combination of thinking and, you know, acuteness and just his total package will bring it home for him. So, I mean, if I was Charlo, I would probably steer clear of him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would think so, too. I think that, you know, somebody that's, you know, as hungry as J-Rock is, you know, to try to finally get that shot. I mean, he was, you know, pretty much trying to go after Austin Trout before even getting a title shot. But that didn't happen either, so... seems like Julian Williams is being a fighter that's avoided by most of these top contenders here. See what Terrell, what you have to say about this thing happening here.
Yeah, just once again, if this fight doesn't happen, disappointment. Both are available, and that's all I can say. I would be very disappointed if J-Rock doesn't get to fight the Charlo boy. I mean, it was talked about by both sides after Charlo's last win. And once again, look how we can line it up and get it done. If it doesn't happen, disappointment. And kind of to speak to boxing itself, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that drives fans away from boxing, you know, when certain fights don't come to fruition and it's all because of some bullcrap political reasons or whatever, whatnot, you know. Is boxing a dying sport? No, that's been said for decades at this point. And boxing's still here. It finds a way to reinvent itself in a sense at times. and to survive. And like lately, the latest transition with the advent of the PBC. So boxing has always found a way to survive. But once again, this is the type of stuff with the Danny Garcia Molina proposal, even with this Charlo moving away from J-Rock, this kind of stuff that drives people away from boxing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you on that one. And like you're saying, I mean, yeah, boxing has gone through stuff like this, you know, time and time again. And, you know, it was still able to, you know, it's still able to be a sport that's able to adapt and adjust all of that and survive and, you know, have the numbers that it has. I mean, they were talking about this when, you know, Oscar De La Hoya was the number one guy and then basically faded away. They were saying what was going to happen with the sport then, and it still was able to go strong, and Floyd Mayweather took it to new heights there in reference to pay-per-view and how much, you know, a fighter earns. And so now it's basically going to a time of another transition where, you know, more of these fighters are kind of like asking for the money, but at the same token, it's kind of like taken away from getting these fights made. So it's kind of like a pro and a con to that. World Rank, what you got on it?
Now, I don't want to down the sport. So, you know, this is a sport that I love. So surviving is relative. Wrestling is surviving, but it's not as it once was, you know. So surviving is relative. So if, you know, boxing is not on the mainstream anymore. So at some point it is dying because it's no longer on the mainstream. At one time it was, and then it's not. It's only now because, you know, Canelo, and shout out to the Spanish Americans and Mexican fans, because that's what keeping the sport alive. Canelo is an A-side despite having, you know, questionable decisions or whatever. But that just goes to Mexican people believing in the sport or whatever the case may be. They are what's keeping the sport where it is right now. But in terms of that particular fight not being made, this is one of the stages where you have two talented fighters under the same banner, mandatory, and we can't make the fight. And it speaks to fighters being able to have talent that is worth being paid for, but they're not putting butts in the seat. So you have a Charlo and a Julian Williams who are great talent and might deserve six figures or seven figures or whatever the case may be to make this seven figures to make this fight. But they can't, you can't go in a casino or you can't go to the MGM Grand and sell out. So now you have a attendance of maybe 3,000 people, but you're paying over $2 or $3 million for a fight. That doesn't make sense. So, you know, that's why PBC is kind of fading. HBO is getting out of the boxing business because we're paying guys, they're worth that in the ring, but outside the ring, they're not worth that. And you get these fights. And I believe that's the case, which is the same case with when Andrade supposed to fought one of the Charlo brothers. Well, you got talented people who demand a certain amount of money, but the ticket sales and who's going to pay for these fights.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. You know, when you mentioned, you know, the Charlo brothers, basically, it was like I said there on May 21st, they had that, you know, super welterweight triple header, and they put that over in the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, over in the little ballroom area that they had over there. So, you know, not necessarily sure what the Chelsea Ballroom capacity is for a boxing event, but, you know, for them not to be able to find something for Charlo and J-Rock to, you know, get to, it kind of like speaks a little bit of volumes. But I think they may have been able to find a place for it, but one or the other may not have agreed with the site, because if you think about it, you could put this fight either in Houston or in Philadelphia, and it would bring people to the seats. I know it would over in Philadelphia. They would be able to, you know, bring people over there to see the fight. But with, you know, J-Rock being so close to the Philadelphia area, I don't think that Jermell Charlo would be able to agree to something like that, especially being the champion. And at the same token, I don't think J-Rock would probably be completely down with having a fight over in Houston. But sometimes, you know, some fighters have to make that concession to have it, you know, at somebody else's hometown in order to, you know, get the fight or get that title shot. I mean, way back in the day, they had Zab Judah going over to St. Louis to, you know, to fight for the welterweight belts and get the welterweight belt there.
Corey Spinks?
When he was able to, yeah, against Corey Spinks. So, I mean, if he was able to, you know, go into Spinks' hometown and do it, then, I mean, you got other guys that are, you know, able to do it, other fighters that are able to do it as well. Floyd Mayweather went to Atlantic City. That was, you know, Arturo Gotti's home, you know, home arena and was able to, you know, have that fight there against him. So, I mean, at that point, Floyd Mayweather, you know, wasn't the biggest star that he is now. So he had to make the concessions there. So sometimes these boxers have to, you know, be able to put things aside and see if they could just make that sacrifice in order to get that big shot. And so I think here that may have been the case, but I haven't really seen anything that kind of hinted at it. So it looks like this fight here between J-Rock and Charlo has kind of like faded out, and hopefully it could get, you know, flamed back up again before the end of this year. But as for now, it doesn't look like it's happening.
Do you guys think that compounding or stacking these cards with like good fights would overcome the one or two fighters' inability to bring people in the seats? So let's say they have four or five up and comers. Don't you think that all those people would bring, you know, the numbers to fill up, you know, these arenas, not arenas, but these facilities that they normally wouldn't fill up alone? Or does that cut too much into the pie to where it's not enough slices to give everybody?
I would think that they do that now, though. I would think they would already have done that. With all cards, they always bring in local talent. And still sometimes, you know, these, for whatever reason, and it goes back to my point about the Mexican and Spanish market, they support their fighters financially, in going to see Canelo, despite whatever people think of Canelo, to go and see him $40,000, $50,000, to go see Roman Gonzalez in California, $10,000, you know,
But their premiums are different from ours. They not getting charged the luxury tax that the Americans getting charged. Am I incorrect in thinking that?
I mean, the fights aren't here in the U.S. So the you know, Canelo's fight in Texas against Trout, and even last night, that's in the United States. Roman Gonzalez fight was in California. I mean, it's just, you know, even the Puerto Rican market, you know, Cotto fights in New York, you know, if, you know, a certain group of people don't, you know, go follow their people, then you will have that. You have, you know, you would have the tickets being sold. You know, we had that with Corey Spinks. We had St. Louis is one of the few places that had that. You know, Corey Spinks and Devin Alexander, they were able to, you know, sell decent amount of tickets. Even Andre Ward, you know, to a certain extent, sells tickets. But other than that, we don't have that base that you know, that the Puerto Ricans have or the Spanish or Mexican have.
Right. And it was like you were saying here in reference to, like, local fighters kind of like filling out cards. I mean, you know, here in D.C. we had, you know, a string of fight cards where you know, at least one or two of the guys that were, or one or two of the fights that were in those featured people that were, you know, local. You know, like Lamont Roach Jr., for example, is one. There was like a heavyweight that was on in that Rock Nation Sports fight card that they had over here. You know, Darmani Rock was a guy that, you know, was here in the D.C. area that was part of the fight. So, yeah, a lot of these cars, they do have, like, the local guys in there. And so, you know, if you want to try to bring butts in the seats, then that's what you do. You get somebody from the area that will be able to, you know, bring their family, bring their friends in, and, you know, tell people that, you know, this local guy is coming in to fight as part of this fight card. So, you know, come through and support. So that's how they get, you know, a good amount of those tickets sold, is because to support the local fighter. It doesn't necessarily have to be coming from the main event. It's just that, you know, that people are out there to support the local fighter that's out there. But, you know, other than that, as far as, like, filling out these cards, I think what the move might have to be for some of them is that they would have to just stop, you know, going all out as far as, like, the grand, you know, like giving out a grand presentation for a fight instead of the fight itself, you know. So you shouldn't, like, have to have a fight like a caliber of a Andre Ward, Sergey Kovalev to be at an arena that's brand new or that's fairly new, if you could fit it in something that, you know, fits 10 to 15,000. You get your money. You get your money back if you sell the tickets right and promote the fight right. You'll be able to get that money back. But, you know, kind of like putting it in these large arenas and, you know, still trying to sell the tickets at, you know, the values that they want to sell it in. You're not going to make money at the gate doing that. So I think, you know, what the move is going to have to be is to start having these fights at these smaller venues. That's why DC Armory had that string of fights there in the DC Armory, because, you know, with a lot of those main events, you couldn't have those main events anywhere, pretty much anywhere else where we had that much success in them, unless if you had something like that. Oh, another one, the main event that was in March 5th had Tony Thompson, who was a DC guy there that went up against Luis Ortiz. So not only was Lamont Roach in that card, but Tony Thompson was there in the main event. So that's why you had a lot of DC support in that particular fight, because of those two local guys. So I think that's pretty much the move there in that case.
One more thing I wanted to say is another thing that may present a problem is what they're doing to the prospects when they're coming up. Sometimes when you pay, I know there's certain situations, they're paying guys five figures for a six-round fight. Or they're paying them, you know, six figures for an eight-round fight. And they're not even on TV. So that's part of it, too. So when we paying these guys six figures to be on an eight-round undercard fight, once they step up, they're going to want twice as much as that, because now they're making a step up. So you're paying a guy, you know, $100,000 to roll over a guy in two rounds. What you think they're going to want when they step up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But how disproportionate is it, though, with those guys who making that, though?
Say that again?
How disproportionate is it with those guys making that? I would imagine it's not that many guys making it.
No, it's not that many guys, but when you put on a big card like that, you have two or three blue chip prospects. You got the, you know, the Gervonta Davises of the world who haven't really stepped up yet, but I'm pretty sure he's making a decent amount of money being that particular that A-level prospect, or, you know, a Luke Campbell if you want to do match room. You know, there's different people who not really, their opposition may make $3,000, but they're making five and six, you know, figures
for a guy they're going to blow in two rounds. So then it comes up when they got to step up, they're going to want more money.
Yeah, that's kind of true in that aspect. But, you know, one of the other things that kind of like takes away with it too is the whole deal with a particular fighter. I mean, yeah, they may be able to get, you know, 5 or 6 figures, but how much of that 5 or 6 figures are they going to be able to keep? I mean, you got the promoter that needs to share, then they got the manager that needs to share, they got the trainer that needs to share, their, you know, second assist and all of that. So, you know, once all of those costs get broken down and everything, it's still the, you know, amount of take-home pay that kind of like is a key to how much the fighter actually earns or not. So, yeah, they may be able to get those 5 or 6 figures, you know, on face value, but, you know, once they're finished with the fight, it's like how much are they going to be able to take home? Because sometimes that determines if they're able to fight, you know, once, you know, two to three times a year, or they end up fighting 6 fights.
Yeah, not even world class. If you look at the elite guys, let's say Liam Smith, he probably made some decent money yesterday. When he goes back to the UK and his next fight is going to be an undercard 8-rounder, he's going to make a decent amount of money, even though it's against the nobody, because his level of pay has just went up, even though he lost.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I would be interested to see what David Lemieux was able to earn in his last fight after fighting Gennady Golovkin when he scored his win there. So that's something that, you know, that's something to look into. That I might, you know, kind of like see if I could drop some articles in reference to that on social media, maybe you know, through Twitter or Instagram or on Facebook. So maybe on the lookout for that over the course of the week. On that note, folks, I'm going to close out the show. We're going to get into it once again next week here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to catch the sister shows on here, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, Tuesday nights at 8:30 with the execution of Matthew Long, and Wednesday at 8:30, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show with Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Clausell Mathis, and Tony Watley. But here on the Boxing Source Radio Show, the theme at the end always is the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to send and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good one.